We're going to look tonight, jumping forward a few chapters, like I said, maybe we'll go back, to Kriyat Yam Suf, the splitting of the sea, Am Yisrael leaving Egypt. You'll recall they flee Egypt and the sea is closed in front of them. And what we're going to look at is just that very moment before the sea parts and Am Yisrael go through for it, the moment at which Am Yisrael arrive at the sea. Now, we're going to do it very differently to how we normally give our shir. Normally our shir in at this point is very much a pshat oriented shir, looking for the simple meaning, but the real sort of simple, clear meaning of the verses. Pshat is famously contrasted with drash or with midrash, right? Where the midrash is not aiming to have the simple, obvious, clear reading of the text, but is actually being very playful and looking for much more associative ways of reading the text. Now, midrash is something which many people very much misunderstand. The line I hate most, which I used to hear it quite a lot, is people saying, friends of mine saying, "Oh, it's just a midrash, right? You know, you don't need to pay attention to that idea. That's just a midrash." Which, to me, when you hear people say that, it completely misses the point of what a midrash is. Midrash can be seen as often doing two things, right? Sometimes you have to try and tell which one it's doing. Sometimes it's doing both. Sometimes it's telling you a point outside of the text. I mean, it's using the text as an excuse to tell you a really interesting and worthwhile point that you should take home. That's one option. But the other option is that actually the midrash, in its way and in its language, is actually doing something to give you an insight into the pesukim, which just a simple sort of pshat reading isn't really able to cope with. I'll just give one more sort of introduction into the world of midrash. Whenever I teach midrash, and this isn't a course on midrash, but it's worth referring to. The two most important words when it comes to the whole study of midrash, really the two most important letters, are Dalad Aleph. Anybody know what Dalad Aleph stands for? With a chuk-chuk in the middle? Davar Acher, right? Davar Acher means another one. Here's another one, right? The way in which we often move from one midrash to another one is Dalad Aleph, Davar Acher, here's another one. Within those two letters, you get the whole philosophy of midrash summed up, I think, right? Because when you're arguing over the pshat, when you're trying to work out the simple, straightforward meaning, you're so convinced there is only one way of looking at it. This is the correct one. Now, the Rashbam and the Ibn Ezra might argue with each other about what is the correct one, but each one is convinced of it. Whereas Midrash, by definition, never makes any claim to exclusivity. It never claims that its point is the sole right point. As soon as you've got one, you've got Davar Acher, here's another one. There's sort of like a very playful element with that idea as well. But at the heart of Midrash is the understanding that the text contains the potential for multiple, many, myriad different drashot that can be said. And maybe as a way of sort of summing this point up, you can think of a pasuk as having its life, as in like its lived life in the text. That pasuk, Yud Gimel, lives between the end of Pasuk Yud Bet and the beginning of Pasuk Yud Dalet, and that's where it is, that's its location in the story. But a Pasuk in the world of Midrash also has an afterlife, right? It's got the way in which it carries on living well after you have finished reading the story. And that verse can sort of like stand alone and like teach multiple things and be of symbolism and relevance even once it's been divorced from the story. So Midrash sort of like allows the psukim to carry on living and breathing even when you're not looking at them in context. Those are some remarks to begin with. The piece that I want to do tonight is based on a lovely piece by Rav Shagar, Rav Shimon Gershon Rosenfeld, passed away a few years ago, very, very important teacher in Israel, prolific writer on many different topics, and he has a number of very lovely essays on Midrash. The way in which he reads it is that the Midrashim are always in conversation with one another. Davar Acher isn't just, oh, here's another one, but you can actually look at different Midrashim, which are going to say different things to one another, as being in conversation and in dialogue with one another. Before we get to the Midrashim, though, we've got to look at the Pesukim. It's not just enough just to start reading the Midrashim straight. You've got to try and look at, in the Pesukim, what are the tensions, or what are the rough bits in the text which the Midrashim are going to want to sort of jump on and we're going to want to put pressure on. So if you open up your Chumashim, we are in Shmot Perek Yod Dalet, chapter 14, Parshat Beshalach, page 368. At the bottom of this page, we are describing the Egyptians pursuing after Bnei Yisrael, Pasuk Chet, V'yirudof Acharei Bnei Yisrael, they pursue after, sorry, V'yirudofu Mitzrayim, Pasuk Tet Achareihem, the Egyptians chase after them. V'yisiguotam, they overtake them. Chonim al hayam, camping by the sea. Kol sus recha paro, all of the horses and the chariots and the army of Pharaoh, Parashah v'chaylo, all of his soldiers, etc., etc. What I want you to now do. Paro hikriv, Pharaoh draws close. You can sort of skim over those next few verses. Am Yisrael then turn to Moshe, right? Anyway, let's even go from Pasuk Yud. What I want you to do is to read from Pasuk Yud, verse 10, at the top of page 370, until Pasuk Tet Zayin. So just 7 verses, verse 17, sorry, 16, 2 into Shlishi. As you read it, I just want you to try and figure out what are the problems in the text. What are the issues? What are the things that don't seem to really make much sense? There's going to be one very obvious one to look out for, and that's going to be the jumping off point for all the midrashim that we're going to look at. So, turn to your chavruta, turn to somebody next to you, and those 6-7 pesukim. Read them, what are their difficulties, and we'll come back in a couple of minutes. Okay, should we come back together, everybody? Let's return.
Yeah.
Have we people gone back to talking about olives and things? Okay, Nina keeps her olives on the pizza. All right, everyone. What have we got? What are the knobbly bits? What are the bits which sort of seem to not be a completely smooth reading, which a midrash might be want to interrogate? It can either be a textual problem, or it can be, if you like, a philosophical problem. What have you got, Avi? Was there a hand?
Pinchas got 10 of them.
Okay.
I don't have 10 of them. Be a liar. We're just reading through finding different issues and stuff.
Share with me okay. A number. Give me one. Give me your best one.
The fact that it describes Mitzrayim as my best one.
Yeah.
I was just going to do it. I'm going to do the first one. I don't know. I haven't ranked them yet.
Okay.
The fact that it describes Mitzrayim as Nosea for a hand in singular.
Interesting. Okay.
Rashi tells us why.
Okay. Good. Not going to be my topic for this evening, but good. Yigal?
Pasuk Tet Vav, it says, God's telling Moshe, like, why are you calling out to me? But it was Ben Israel that called out to God. Moshe, it never says that Moshe called out to God.
Oh, very, very good. Excellent. Vayomer Hashem and Moshe, Pasuk Tet Vav, God says to Moshe, Mati Tzakelai, why did you call out to me? Daber le Ben Israel, v'yisal, speak to Israel, and go. Yigal points out correctly, Mehechetesi, where do we get that from, that Moshe cried out to God? That is not in the text. Avi, you answering this question?
Add on to that.
Okay.
What the heck did they yell out about?
Ah, very, very good. Meaning, not only do we not have any record of Moshe crying out to God, was that one of Pinchas's? Did you take that one?
But I did have one of my own.
I think that was Pinchas's best one. Let me just elaborate on the one you've just said, and then we'll go back to your own one before you've played your. You know what you're like? You're just like the kids at SBA, right?
Just like the ones who shoplift because they can't be bothered waiting in the queue, right? You know, you've shoplifted Pinchas' Torah.
I hope you guys
can
learn together.
Can they have a staff?
We're a team in everything we do.
Interesting, interesting. Is there a concept of stealing Torah, or is Torah always shared? In the Bet Midrash of Brisk in Yerushalayim, they only keep stuff photocopied, and you are not allowed to take it out of the Bet Midrash because the Torah of Brisk of the recent generations can only stay on the inside. When I told my uncle that, who's a rav in Gush, Datilo and me sort of fell off his chair in shock that people would do that. It is rather. okay, so Avi and Yigal's point is not only is there no record of Moshe crying out to Hashem, and Hashem saying to him, why are you crying out to me? But there is actually a record of Am Yisrael crying out to Hashem earlier on, Pasuk Yud, verse 10, V'yitzaku v'nei Yisrael al Hashem, and Israel cried out to God. So it's not Moshe crying out to God, it's Am Yisrael crying out to God. And I think what Avi was adding on to that is, what do they say? We're not told what they say, right? We're told they cry out, we're not told what they say, because then the next verses seem to be Am Yisrael talking to Moshe, right?
I have an idea of my own example.
Oh, interesting. Does anybody else have an idea, either of their own or of Avi's, that they want to share before we give Avi another go?
Go for it.
Go for Avi.
The next pasuk, I find it ironic.
Which pasuk?
Yud Aleph.
Yeah.
If Mitzrayim is the people that are chasing them, and they're just crying out, they want to go back to the people who want to kill them.
Mibli ein kvarim b'mitzrayim. Right. Meaning, well, is that so such a difficulty?
Yes.
No, are they saying they want to go back?
Yes.
You know, Avi, I'm sorry. When you quote Pinchas, you do better.
Is this all being recorded?
It is all being recorded. I do have some friends in the UK who like ask me like, how's Pinchas doing and stuff.
Well, they're like, I don't want to be tough.
Okay, so Avi, you're right that this theme is going to only develop throughout, when really it gets to its peak in Sefer Bamidbar, where you get these sort of like, you know, people longing to go back to Egypt. I think, you know, it's what we call in modern English Stockholm syndrome. If people are. okay, right. You know, it's identifying with your captor. Here, I don't think they're quite saying that. Here, I think they're saying like, we might as well have died in Egypt or carried on being slaves in Egypt. Marco?
Yeah, because it's also something that they know. Like here, it's a total unknown. And like, okay, at least there we know how we're gonna die.
Right.
Also, I mean, kind of relevant to that, but something I found is that they said, oh, this is just like what we said to you. We said, like, before you took us out, let us be, we'll stay in Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
We looked back. They don't, I mean, even when Paro gives them more work, they're like, oh, curse you, Moshe, and they don't say that you should let us be slaves in Egypt.
Well, one of the very noteworthy things in the chapters between where we were last week and where we are this week is that once Am Yisrael have, you know, the first time they've rejected Moshe and they say, stop hurting us, once Moshe does come back and things start going, it's completely Hashem, Moshe, Paro. Am Yisrael are almost a non-player, right? They're completely passive. So what is this? What was it referring to? Could be referring back to the very first time that Moshe came, or to something that we haven't been told in the intervening chapters. Yeah, very interesting. Megan?
Really random, but after Yadala to Tet Vav, there's like a break, and I'm not someone who knows like what happens in their spaces sometimes, but is that like a break because like time's taken place there, or it's just how it's formatted inside, like of the Chumash? Like, is it saying like the last thing that happened, like Moshe said to Israel, like, keep calm, everything's fine, and then, like, a little while later, we just come in, like, Hashem spoke to
That's a very good question. Paragraph breaks are not normally things that we darshan for the simple reason they're just so common. They're everywhere. You'll actually only really darshan sort of subcategories which are much rarer. For instance, if you have a paragraph break in the middle of a verse, which occurs all of, I believe, three times in all of Chumash. It's a very, very rare occurrence for you to have a paragraph break in the middle of a pasuk.
Pinchas has one, you know, about what's it called?
Reuven.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the sort of thing you can't search for on Bar-Ilan. Well, the two nuns is obviously a very interesting thing. Alternatively, when you just have a huge block without any breaks is a very interesting one. But it's an interesting question, but it's a very hard one to answer, Megan. I've got another question. The Yom HaShem El Moshe, the verse that everyone is focusing on, verse 15. Matitzak Eli, why are you crying out to me? Not only do we not know what Moshe has cried out, but...
He just speak to the
Israel. He did seem to, but that's not a textual problem, but sort of like a philosophical problem. God's seemingly angry with him for crying out to him. Isn't that weird? As in, don't we normally think that crying out to God is a good thing?
No.
No?
Not when you
Well, I mean, maybe Avi, maybe we don't. But if that is the case, then that's a point you're going to have to alecha haraya. You're going to have to prove that.
Because then it goes straight against what we the like earlier Pesukim are saying, where like it's what Moshe is telling them. Hashem Yilachem Lachem. That that's why he's mad because Bnei Yisrael speak to God and they're like no we like the reason that they're yelling out to him is because they're yelling that they should have died in Mitzrayim, not that they want God to save him. Then they need Moshe to be that like that's like it's like the break of this little chunk. That first it's Bnei Yisrael yelling out wanting to go back. Moshe is mediator and then going back to God trying to save them and God's a little annoyed about that first part about them. Not going straight to like just believing in Hashem that he'll just save them.
Okay, so let's go from these discussions into the Midrashim. I'm going to basically put together and summarize from everything that people have said two distinct problems, which are going to be dealt with by the Midrashim and going to be dealt with differently by different Midrashim. Different Midrashim are going to argue with one another. The first one is who is crying out? Is it Am Yisrael crying out? Or is it Moshe crying out? And how do we look at those two different ideas of the people crying out versus Moshe crying out? That's the first one. The second one is focusing on the issue that Avi was just speaking about. What is the problem with Matitzak Eli? Why shouldn't Moshe call out to God? Isn't that a perfectly valuable thing to do? So those are our two problems. Who is crying out and what is the problem with crying out? So... let's begin with the latter one. Do take a source sheet, take one and pass on. As I said, the Midrashim, the way in which Rav Shugar reads them, and I find this very compelling, we should view the Midrashim as being in dialogue with one another, actually as arguing with one another. So let's go with source number two. Source number two, all of these are in Shemot Rabbah, by the way, is going to be addressing the question of what's the problem with crying out? What does it mean, Matitzak Eli? Why shouldn't Moshe cry out to God? Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, Matitzak Eli, Daber el Bnei Yisrael v'Yisrael. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe. God said to Moshe, Eit l'katzer v'eit l'harich. There is a time to be brief, and a time to speak at length, right? Sometimes it's good to have a long conversation. Sometimes it's good to stand in tefillah for a very long time. Other times, you should just get straight to the point. Banai shruyim b'tza'ar. My children are engulfed in pain. V'hayam soger. The sea is closed against them. V'ha'oyev rodef. And the enemy are pursuing them. V'ata omed u'marbe b'tefillah. And you're just standing here, shockling and davening to me, crying out to me. Daber el ben Yisrael v'yiso. Speak to Am Yisrael and go. Move. Hurry up. Act. So there's a whole world of philosophy contained in here. Right? What is the problem with Matitzak Eli? What is God expressing by saying to Moshe, why are you crying out to me? Pinchas, what are you going to say? What is the problem he's expressing? There's a time to tefillah and there's a time for action. Right? And you shouldn't get confused. You should know when is the time for tefillah and when is the time for action. Because sometimes the circumstances call for it. You've got to act. You've got to do this yourself. You've got to get on with it. So admittedly, the Pesukim don't tell us what Moshe is crying out about. But what this Midrash seems to be expressing is a philosophical position
which says that we as Am Yisrael, we as mankind, sometimes need to take events into our own hands. We don't rely on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or at least we don't speak to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when we ourselves are supposed to be acting. Right? Very, very interesting. Moshe is being criticized here by Hashem, right? Enough with the tefillah. And obviously one can, you know, very easily apply this idea to many different historical situations.
He's criticized for tzaaking or screaming when he didn't even do it.
Well, that's a very, very good question. We're going to assume that Moshe did do it for now, right? That it's not there. You're right, Joe. It's not there in the text, but you know, we can imply that the Moshe did cry out by the fact that Hashem is responding. But you know, you make a good point. Possibly. Maybe because if I wanted to go a little bit deeper, maybe because Hashem thinks that the prayer is out of place at that point. Therefore, for that reason, it doesn't mention it. Possibly, right? But you've got to get to the... sometimes you've got to act, right? So you could apply this to, you know, the argument over... you know, it's not really an argument today, but an argument 100 years ago over the religious value or complete unvalue of Zionism, right? You know, are we allowed to take events into our own hands, force history returning to the land of Israel, ascending the wall in the way in which the Gemara phrases it, or are we... Yeah, Satmar and Torah Kata are, but they're in somewhat of a minority today. I think the Tzionim have won the argument these days. Or are we supposed to sit passively in the exile waiting for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do it?
They come to the rallies of Palestinian blood, they come to demonstrate against.
So they're still pretty vocal, but there aren't that many of them. The Torah Kata is only a few hundred people worldwide, so... But they just make a lot of noise. This midrash is expressing of that of the attitude that says sometimes we need to take events into our own hands. Know when is Eit LaKatzil, know when is Eit LaHarich. Okay, that is midrash number one. Watch this now for a completely different midrash, one which is going to address exactly the same question of what's the problem with Tzaka, why shouldn't Moshe cry out to Hashem, but is going to give a completely different spin on it. Watch this. Source number three. This is going to be a certain model of Midrash, by the way, where we quote one verse, we open with this verse, and then we follow a specific sort of word in that verse to then link with lots of other verses throughout Tanakh, normally in Ketuvim, especially normally in Nevi'im and Ketuvim. We sort of make a whole elaborate framework, and then having linked about three or four even five verses, we then return back to the original one. Watch what we do now. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe matitzak elai. Hashem says to Moshe, why are you crying out to me? Hahu da'amar, this is what is referred to in Tehillim. Tza'aku, cry out. Vashem shama, and God will hear. Mahu ken, see how this is so. Shtei Yerushot Hinchil Yitzchak L'shnei Banav. Yitzchak, Isaac, our forefather, gave two inheritances to his children. Hinchil L'Yaakov Hakol. Hakol Kol Yaakov. V'Hinchil L'Esav Hayadayim Shne'emar V'Hayadayim Yidei Esav. He gave to Jacob his voice, his call, his ability to speak and to talk to God, and he gave to Esav his hands, his sort of like his physicality, his force, right? People recognize the verse that it's playing off? Mm-hmm. Where's the verse from?
Sheet.
Yeah, what, where in Bereshit? What's being said? Right, so Yitzchak's confusion, aged, blind Yitzchak, saying, who is this in front of me? Right, Yaakov is in front of him, dressed up in his brother's skins. He says, "Hakol kol Yaakov, v'hayadayim yidei Esav." The voice is the voice of Jacob. The hands are the hands of Esav. Right, in the original. Sorry.
He bent the hand and put the hair on his arm and all that. Well, why did he talk like himself? He could have talked like Esav too and pulled him in that way also.
Maybe it's more difficult to impersonate someone's voice. If you asked me to do an American accent, Joe, I would not be able to do it. So maybe a Texas one.
Might not literally mean his voice, it's what he said.
So interesting. Could be. Possibly. Possibly. But our point is really the way in which the Midrash turns us completely into a metaphor.
What Yaakov has got is his call. What Esav has got is his hands. And so too for their descendants. The Esav hayamit ga'er b'yirushato. Esav was proud of his inheritance. Now quotes a verse in Bamidbar. Am Yisrael wanting to pass through the land of Edom. Edom, the descendants of Esav. Vayomer elav Edom, lo ta'abor bi pen b'charev. You shall not pass through my land lest we strike you with the sword. Esav is given the Yadayim, and his descendants use their sword, use their might. V'yakov mitga'er b'yirushato. So too, Jacob was proud of his inheritance. Shene Emar, now talking about Devarim. V'nitzak el Hashem, elokei avoteinu. We cried out to God, the God of our forefathers. We also, in the present, use our voice. Esav uses his hands. Am Yisrael use their voice, use their tefillah. La'atid lavo, in the future. Shnehem notlis charan. Each one will take their reward for what they do. Esav natal tzcharo. Esav will take his reward, and this is now laced with irony. Quoting a verse in Yeshayahu, Ki ravta b'shamayim harbi, my anger shall descend from the heavens as a sword. In other words, God, those who live by the sword will eventually die by the sword, and God's sword will destroy. Hine al Edom tered, it will descend upon Edom. Ve'yakov natal tzcharo, and Jacob will also take his reward. Shene emar, verse in Yirmiyahu, Kol sason v'kol simcha, the voice, the sounds of delighting or of rejoicing, kol chatan v'kol kala, etc., etc. Lekach ketiv, therefore it is written, the verse in Tehillim, tzaku v'Hashem shama, cry out to God and He will listen. And now we go back to our original story. Lefi sh'tzaku b'nei Yisrael, because Israel cried out at the sea, Israel cried out to Hashem. Therefore, Hashem says to Moshe, Ma titzak elai? Why are you crying out to me? Why did you cry out? Kvar shamati tzakatam. I've already heard their voice. They've already spoken to me. V'itzaku Yisrael el Hashem. Daber el b'nei Yisrael v'yisav. All you've got to do is to speak and to go. That's all that's needed. Right? Speak to them and go. So if the first midrash was all about how now is not a time for tefillah. Now you've just got to take action, right? Now you can't sit passively and pray. You've got to actually, you know, do things yourself. The second midrash says the opposite. No, it's not. You know, the Jewish approach is not to think sometimes you should pray, sometimes you should take action. The Jewish approach is to understand that, you know, we're presented with a paradigm of what is Yaakov and Yaakov's descendants versus what is Esav and Esav's descendants. What it means to be B'nai Yaakov is people who understand Kol Yaakov, HaKol Yaakov. The voice is the voice of Yaakov. Yaakov is one who cries out. Hashem says to Moshe, Mati Tzakilai, why are you crying out to me? Because Am Yisrael have already cried out. This is what Am Yisrael do, and this is what Am Yisrael should do. So two completely different takes on that tzaka. You got it.
But also, like, God telling Moshe, go speak to the nation, which you can also describe as a kol. So, like, a voice can be calling out, or it can be speech, or, like, impact on people.
Oh, sorry, elaborate.
When we say, like, kol kol Yaakov, it doesn't necessarily mean calling out to God.
Are you talking about in general, or in the terms of the Midrash?
I'm saying, like, outside of the Midrash, because, like, I don't know, I'm just saying, like, in this context of the pasuk that it's talking about, it's relating the call of Yaakov to calling out to God.
Mm-hmm.
But in the context of the pasuk, God's contrasting that with speaking to the nation, which can also be described as a call. So it's sort of like, it doesn't really go against that.
Well, no, in the context of the pasuk, Matitzak Elai, why are you crying out to me, implying that Moshe has spoken to God, Moshe is crying out to God, and Hashem's response vis-a-vis via the Midrash is to say, Am Yisrael have prayed to me because that's what Am Yisrael do. I don't need your tefillah. It's all right. I don't require your tefillah as well. Right? Which is, not to say that Moshe's tefillah isn't important, but to say that, how is it contrasted with the previous Midrash? If the previous Midrash said, now's not a time for tefillah,
now is a time for action. This midrash says now is always a time. Sorry, always, it's always a time for tefillah because that's what Am Yisrael do. That's the difference between these people. It's a fascinating, like it's a really, really fascinating idea. And you know, if you wanted to elaborate with the idea and run with it, then you would, you would think about the fact that Am Yisrael, certainly at least until the 20th century, have never survived because of their physical strength. Remarkably, you know, we have been a people who have lived without political sovereignty, without armed military presence and force. Now, whether you see this as a blessing or whether you see this as a curse is, which approach you take to that question is, puts you on different sides of some of the most important arguments that there have been in the last 100 years. For a real Zionist, religious or secular, living without power is a sin, right? For many religious people, and also some non-religious people, but who sort of like they move from talking about tefillah and Torah to talking about sort of culture and intellectualism, on the contrary, power corrupts. Power makes you just like everybody else. The Esav is the rest of the world, right? That's what the whole rest is, lust for power. What has made the Jewish people special has been the fact that their whole national character has never been dependent upon that. And, Israel and sovereignty and Zionism is seen as a disaster from this aspect. So you can look at these Midrashim, nearly 2,000 years ago, talking about Midrashei Tanaim, as, giving expression to some of the most important tensions that there are. I mean, even to this day. I'll give you just a very quick sort of two sides of this. There's a lovely book by Rabbi Chaim Navon. I've got it downstairs. It's a cute book. It's called Teshim V'Tesha or Me'a Machlokot Shel Am Yehudi. It's the 100 top arguments of the Jewish people. Different one on every page. So he quotes, it basically talks about this argument. Two people on two sides. One is Aleph Bet Yehoshua. Anyone heard of Aleph Bet Yehoshua? Well-known Israeli author, who was asked to address the AJC, the American Jewish Congress. I remember this, probably about 8 or 9 years ago, at the 100th anniversary of the AJC. The AJC, a big American group, and he stood in front of them, the guest of honor, and he said, "The fact that you still exist today is a disgrace. Right? You should not exist." And he went on to essentially make the argument, just by definition of living in Israel, I am automatically more Jewish than any of you, right? My son serves in the army. The national holidays are Jewish holidays, and whatever you do, you will never be as Jewish as me. This was Aleph Bet Yehoshua's argument. I think it was like a day or two after or day before Yom HaZikaron, and nothing had been said about it. I think that was what sort of like got him. That's who Rabbi Chaim Navon puts on the one side of the argument. And on the other side of the argument, he puts Ha'achim Boyarin, the Boyarin brothers, Daniel and Jonathan Boyarin, who are both academics. Daniel is at Berkeley. He's a Talmud guy, very, very brilliant. Jonathan is an anthropologist at Cornell, but actually lives on the Lower East Side. I've got to know him a little bit in the last few months. Very, very nice guy. They're sort of like modern Orthodox Carter, basically. I don't want to say Neturei Carter in the terrible associations with it. Like, as far as I know, like they would never in a million years go and dance with Hamas, Chas V'Shalom. But they are intellectually extremely opposed to the whole idea of Jewish sovereignty and the state. They wrote a fascinating article together a number of years ago where they argued that the Jewish people's greatest contribution to world history is not monotheism or ethical monotheism, rather it's the creation of the idea of diaspora, right? The idea that you can survive and flourish as a people even when you are not physically there on your land, right? And so which side do you take? Both of those people, Aleph Bet Yehoshua and the Boyarin brothers, are extremely smart, intelligent, brilliant, and both have completely opposite views, which in many ways connect to these Midrashim.
Any thoughts and questions on that?
Can I borrow the book?
We're Rabbi Navon's book? Or, yeah. Sure. If we're already at the stage, you know. If you were forced to choose between Aleph Bet Yehoshua and the Boyarin brothers, which would you? Don't worry. We'll erase it from the recording. Who would you be?
It's hard to support one wholeheartedly and the other not, because I think both of. I think that both of what they have to say has legitimate points. I'm a Zionist, so I'd go with Aleph Bet Yehoshua. But that's not to say that I think that that the whatever what are their names?
Boyarin, Daniel, and Jonathan.
Boyarin brothers are incorrect. I mean, I see what they're saying. But I couldn't do this as well. So I've had people say to me that I'm an idolater for living abroad anyway. So I'm like, okay, just shrug it off, you know.
Right. What's cool? I mean, you hear it from religious Zionists quite frequently,
yeah,
but here you've got. Here you've got a secular Zionist saying it.
That question is a totally different question than praying or action in time of danger. I don't know if it.
Go on, you're saying I've jumped the gun far too much. Go on.
Well, I just think it has much more to do with a totally different topic, which I guess is kind of related to Yitzhak Mitzrayim of Galut and Gula and that tension. And I think it raises a whole different can of worms.
You're right, Micah, to point out that my jumping from the Midrashim to their argument is not a clear jump. I definitely accept that. Well, I guess all I want to point out is sort of like what's connecting them is that one Midrash presents as just the paradigm of Jewish living, of, you know, speaking to God, and, you know, we are not a sub. We don't rely on the sword, and that is opposite to our nature. Whereas the other Midrash says there's a time for tefillah, and there's a time to act in the world. Okay, two more midrashim. This time addressing a slightly different question, which is the relationship between Am Yisrael crying out and between Moshe crying out, and the different sort of weights and values that we attribute to each one. And again, two midrashim, which completely different with one another. Davar Achel, a different reading. Source number 4. Matitza, why do you cry out to me? We're going to do something similar to last time, where we quote one verse, and then we build off it like 4 or 5 other verses to construct a whole piece. The following midrash is one of the most beautiful midrashim. As far as I know, it's not particularly well known. But whenever you all go off as adults to establish your own communities or to join communities, you should all take this midrash and put it at the heart of the sort of community that you want to build. Matitzak elai. Hahu da'amal. This is what he has said, connecting it now to a different verse into Hillim. Shomea tefila adecha kol basar yavo. He hears the prayer of his community. All flesh pass before him. Mahu shomea tefila. What does it mean? God listens to tefila. Amar Rabbi Yehuda bar Shalom b'shem Rabbi Eliezer. Basar v'dam. Bet vav is the abbreviation. Flesh and blood. Human society. A person in a position of importance. Im ba ani lomar davar lefanav. If a poor person comes before him to request something, eino shomea haimenu. He's not going to be listened to. By contrast, im ba ashir, a wealthy person comes before him lomar davar, to request something, to say something, miyad hu shomea makablo. Immediately he listens to him. Yes, person of significance, importance, and he takes his on his word, or he fulfills his request. God is not like this. All are equal before him. Hanashim, ha'avadim, ha'aniyim, ha'ashirim. Whoever you are, whatever gender you are, free person or slave, poor or wealthy, teidalacha, you should know. Shehare Moshe Rabban shel kol ha'neviim. Moshe, the master of all the prophets. Katuv bo, Masha katuv ba'ani. It's written about him, the human being who came closest ever to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, exactly what it's written about a pauper, an impoverished individual. But Moshe Kativ, with Moshe it's said, and now we quote again twice from Tehillim, two well-known ones, This we have every Shabbat morning, Pesukei Dezimra. Tefillah l'Moshe Ish HaElohim, a prayer of Moshe, the man of God. Uba'ani Ketiv, and with impoverished person, it's also written, Tefillah l'Ani Kiyatof V'lifnei Hashem Yishboch Sicho, the prayer of a pauper as he Yatof, as he faints, as he passes out, who before God Yishboch Sicho, he pours forth his conversation. Zutvila vezutvila. This one is called tefillah, and this one is called tefillah. Moshe's prayer is called tefillah. The poor man's prayer is called tefillah. Lehodiacha, to let you know, shakol shavim betefillah. All are equal in prayer lifnei hamakom before God. Whether you are wealthy, whether you are poor, whether you are Moshe, whether you are somebody who everyone else would think would be a nobody, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not discriminate. Teida lecha, you should know. Kushiyatsu Yisrael mimitzrayim, when Israel left Egypt, radaf achareihem paro, Pharaoh pursued them, shene'amar v'faro hikriv, ukativ, and it's written, v'yitzaku el Hashem, and they, Am Yisrael, cried out to God. Hitchil Moshe afu mitpalel. Moshe also began to pray. Lifnei Hamakom. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, Ma ata omed umitpalel? Why are you standing and praying? Kvar hitpalelei. My children have already prayed to me. Am Yisrael have already spoken. V'shamati tefilatan. And I've heard their prayer. Shene'emar, as is said, Ma titzak elai. Isn't that a wonderful thing? Wonderful. Midrash. In other words, Moshe thinks that he's helping them out. He thinks that, you know, Am Yisrael need his prayers, right, in order to save them from Mitzrayim. Hashem responds, Matitzak Elai, why are you crying out to me? I've already heard them, right? I don't need you. It's all right. Am Yisrael themselves have got the power and the significance because HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens to absolutely everybody. Whoever they are, Hashem will listen to them. It's not going to ascribe greater worth to Moshe than he is going to the people. I'll ask a question. Is this Midrash actually saying that the people's prayer is more important than Moshe's prayer? No?
Equal.
Equal, right? So why does Hashem say to Moshe, why are you crying out to me?
Equal.
Right, exactly. It's like a chronological thing. They've already prayed to Hashem, so... And had they not, then Moshe's prayer would be great. But, you know, it's all right. It's already been done. You're right, that is correct. There are more extreme versions of this Midrash. I just put the ones here all from Shmot Rabba, so there'd be one consistent one. In the Kefter Yonatan, a very ancient commentary that you can find on this verse, Tvilatan kodem l'tvilatcha. Their prayer comes before, also like in a value sense, is seen as being more important than Moshe's prayer, which is a really, really fascinating idea. Very, very, very.
There's more of them?
It could
like
be that.
Like, community prayers, like, prays together in, like, a shul versus praying at home alone?
That could be it. It could be the sort of the collective nature of Am Yisrael, as opposed to any individual, even the greatest of individuals. If you wanted to sort of be a bit more adventurous, maybe you'd say precisely the fact that somebody isn't ani is what gives their prayer greater weight. You know, of course, then going to be, you know, massively developed in sort of Hasidic literature and the like. But you know, it's just an amazing anti-elitist midrash here, right? That everybody's tefillah is worthy before Hashem.
I have a question. Because in here it's saying, rather all are equal before him. Would that mean that each individual are equal to Hashem, or the people is equal?
Oh, right. So Nina's got an even better way of unpacking it. Meaning, is it just that the mass collective, the hundreds of thousands of Am Yisrael, that is what means that, because they've all prayed, that's what means that Moshe doesn't need to pray? Or is it actually that even if one of them were to have, that would suffice? Any thoughts?
One.
Why? I agree, but why do you think that?
Because it says each person is equal.
Right.
That means each person is equal to Moshe.
Seems that the whole bulk of the Midrash in the middle is to like establish the equivalency between Tefillah Moshe Isha Elohim and Tefillah Liani Kiyat, or Vezut Tefillah, Vezut Tefillah, the prayer of Moshe and the prayer of the poor man. This one is Tefillah and this one is Tefillah, meaning they are both of the same stature. Thus, one Midrash. The final Midrash, with which we'll finish, will take exactly the same problem in the text and flip it in completely the opposite direction as this Midrash has. Matitzak elai, devar acher, matitzak elai. Why do you cry out to me? Hahu da'amar. Quote the verse now from Eov. V'tigzor omer v'yakam lacha, you decree, and it is done. Amar Rabbi Levi. K'shem sha'akadosh baruch hu metzaveh l'moshe, just as God commands Moshe, umedaber imon, speaks to him, kach haya Moshe mitzaveh k'yafachol lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is really radical. So too, k'viyachol, as it were, Moshe commands God. It isn't just that God commands Moshe. Moshe also commands God. U'k'shem sha'HaKadosh Baruch Hu kore l'Moshe umedaber imon. And just as God speaks to Moshe, calls out to him, kach haya Moshe kore l'HaKadosh Baruch Hu medaber imo. So too does Moshe speak to Hashem. Works in both ways. Shene'emar v'yedaber Hashem el Moshe. Ra'e, see, kama haya sholet, how powerful is Moshe, presumably. Uchshara'a et paro rodef acharei b'nei Yisrael, when he saw Israel being chased by Egypt. Balitzok, he came to cry out. Shne'emar v'yom Hashem el Moshe, as is said, we can imply from what Hashem responds, Matitzak elai, why did you cry out to me? What does this mean? Amar lo, he says to him, Amar tamitzta'el, why are you pained, Moshe? Why are you crying out? Amar, meaning, it's all right. You think you need to cry out to me in order for me to do, like supplicate and, you know, and Moshe, I'll do whatever you tell me. Amar Rabbi Yoshua, Mashal, a parable, lo havoshel, to a person who is beloved of the king. Shehayal or Esek had some business. Halach litzok lifnei hamelech, he went to cry for his interests. Amar lo hamelech, look, the king says, why are you crying out? Gazul, vani ese, tell me what to do, and I'll do it. Kach amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, matitzak elai, why are you crying out to me? Daber, vani ose, tell me what to do, speak to me, and I'll do it. Mati tzakelai, why are you crying out to me? Moshe, whatever you say. Hatzadik gozer v'Hashem makayem. The tzadik decrees and Hashem fulfills. Whatever you tell me to do, I'll do it. You don't need to cry out to me. Other people, yeah, sure, they need to cry out to me. Extremely unique individuals on the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. Tzaka is not required, right? Moshe has a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to such a degree that it's two-directional, not just one-directional. Really, really fascinating Midrash. Would you ever find any way to square this Midrash with the previous one? Could you put the two of them together? The one that says we've got this sort of like radical equivalency of everybody's tefillah, and the one that says, Matitzak elai, why do you cry out to me? I've already heard Am Yisrael. Versus the other Midrash that says, Matitzak elai, why do you cry out to me? Just tell me what to do and I'll do it. Two completely different readings of it. Could you put the two Midrashim together? Or are they just opposed? One in sort of being sort of like radically egalitarian in terms of whose prayer Hashem hears. The other one being far more seeing Moshe as unique.
If you want a version, you could say God hears everyone's prayers, but those who are closest to him, like Moshe, like are more direct. And can, like, instead of like having to like cry and say what, like say like help me, they can say what they need.
Right. Right. So I don't know if you have. I mean, I think I'm with Megan that you don't have to view them as opposite of one another, right? You can understand that Hashem will listen to absolutely everybody's prayer, and you know doesn't want to distinguish between anybody's prayer on the one hand, but at the same time. And if Moshe sees in his prayer, is working with Moshe on such a level that crying out is not what Moshe needs to do. Yishar koach, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that journey into Midrash and the way in which different Midrashim can a few problematic words in a verse can lead to such creativity and to touch such fascinating questions. Yishar koach, everybody. And next week, I'm going to try and do something creative, Shemot and Purim. And run the two together to being the week before Purim, and also to show how... End of Peshalach is the Purim reading. Very, very good. Right, Parashat Zachor. Ah, right. Okay. So we could just carry on with Amalek, or we could try and connect it to the Megillah itself. But as in Megillat Esther itself and Sefer Shemot. See you all next.